Welcome back to America's leading higher education podcast, The EdUp Experience, where we make education your business. Hosts Dr. Joe Salustio, Elizabeth Leiba, and producer Elvin Freites bring you the brightest and most influential minds in higher education today. We explore innovations, ideas, and issues in higher education and beyond, and hopefully have a little fun along the way. Now let's get to it. Ellucian is charting the digital future of higher education with a portfolio of cloud-ready technology solutions and services, from student recruitment to workforce analytics, fundraising, and alumni engagement. Ellucian's comprehensive suite of data-rich tools gives colleges and universities the information they need to lead with confidence. Welcome back, everybody. This is the EdUp Experience, where we make education your business, interviewing the brightest and most influential minds across higher education and beyond. My name is Dr. Joe Salustio. Today, always with me, my co-host, the amazing, the phenom, Elizabeth Leiba. Liz, how are you today?
Am I in trouble? You said my whole name. I did. To get a little bit nervous.
I did. And as I was saying it, I was remembering that I don't say it. So it was too late. I was into the Z-bith part before
too
I realized that
late. I was like, oh no, what did I do now?
Well,
so I'm not in trouble.
I mean, that's debatable. You're always up to something. Doing something.
I am. I stay trying to get good trouble though, right?
As
John Lewis would say, good trouble. Yeah.
So how are we feeling today, Liz? What's your entrance music of choice today? What kind of mood are you in? If you had to pick one song to enter into the room,
What would it be? You know what? I'm so glad you have this question now, because the song that has been in my head, there's a TikTok challenge right now. It's called Chandelier, and I cannot get enough of it. That song by Sia is like, I want to swing from the chandelier.
I know the song. I asked you to sing song. It. I didn't choose it.
Okay, but I didn't know if you knew, because I know you're not really up on pop culture. You know, you're older folk. So I just want to make sure that I school you, hip you up on game, that's the TikTok challenge is going on. And I love that song. That's like literally one of my favorite songs of all time.
Since you have decided that I'm not up on pop culture, I'm going to switch my entrance song today. Ooh. And I'm going to choose Bring the Pain by Method Man, because I want to bring the pain.
Because you're going to bring the pain against me.
I got to bring the pain to you.
Well, you know what? You've been in your home gym, in your garage, working it out with a bunch of bag. So we'll see. I'm going to karate chop you and see if you can stand it.
Speaking of karate chops.
Good segue.
Yes, doing karate chops all across the higher education.
That's right. Hiya.
His name. I'm absolutely not editing that out, that hiya. That will stay in there. I actually think I'm going to extrapolate that
into an
audio bit that will now become a book ended on everything you say. It ends and begins with a hi-ya.
I have
no idea what I'm going to do with that now.
Anyway, our
guest, Dr. Jeremy Moreland, he's provost and chief academic officer at St. Thomas University. Jeremy, how you doing?
I'm doing wonderful. Hi, Joe. Hi, Liz. It's a pleasure to be with you.
It's a pleasure to have you here and hear about the great work that you're doing at St. Thomas University. Where are you right now, and how's the weather? Because I know you're someplace nice and warm.
Absolutely. Right now I'm on our beautiful campus right down here in Miami, Florida at St. Thomas University. It is nice and warm and sunny out right now. It's a little quiet. We just had our 3 commencement ceremonies Friday afternoon. So we have some people taking a little bit of a break right now.
Awesome.
Breaks are good, right? Coronavirus is, one of the things out there right now is that the last 18 months has put such stress on everybody, administrators, certainly on students, but they're their own category. But when you look at administration and staff and faculty, the stressors have been unprecedented in that way. It's something we've never experienced before. How's everybody doing at St. Thomas? You know, as things are starting to move forward now and open up a little bit, is there excitement? Are people flopping over from exhaustion? How's the mood?
Definitely not the latter. So certainly this year's been taxing. This year's been taxing in ways that we're not accustomed to. But you know, it's been a terrific year. We've actually been open all year long. We had so many students who wanted to be sure to be here in person in the fall, and we were flexible in the fall for those who wanted to attend virtually. But you know, really, there's a lot of excitement about moving into a post-pandemic mode for fall 21.
Let's talk a little bit about St. Thomas and the curriculum and the education. You have, I got to get the exact phrase off the website, but I think it's success-focused preparation is the exact, I think that's what it is. Success-focused preparation. What exactly does that mean in your eyes and embedded in the curriculum?
Well, certainly to start, you know, St. Thomas is a Catholic university. We have a rich cultural and international diversity. We're committed to the academic and professional success of our students, who all of whom eventually become ethical leaders in this global community. And what we do here at St. Thomas is we leverage what has always been an excellent liberal arts education. And at the same time, we make sure that our students are ready to be able to execute in the real world. And we do that by listening to what our employers tell us that they want from our students when they join the workplace.
I was actually thinking about my next question here. That's how slow my brain will move at times.
Sorry, Joe.
No worries. What are businesses saying about, you know, this? We've asked this question about, are businesses involved? Are you getting feedback? Yes, you are. Do businesses in general feel that students coming out are prepared for the workforce, or are you constantly getting feedback? Because there's schools and you know, there's a camp out there that says, you know, students are just not business ready. They're just not prepared for the real world. They don't know tenacity. They don't have tenacity. There's not enough grit in the youngsters today. Talk about what you hear from employers. Are students ready?
Terrific question. And that's certainly a theme that one hears out there. But we actually get really positive feedback from our employers, both about our approach and how our students are doing at their businesses and their organizations. You know, you hear a lot of people on the sidelines of higher ed talk about soft skills, you know, that might be coming out of liberal arts focused education. But at St. Thomas, we're really committed to the idea that those are essential skills. And those link very closely to what it is that we hear from employers. They tell us that they want our students to be able to work with other people who aren't just like them. They tell us that they want our students to be able to turn their employees, be able to make sense out of numbers, turn data into information. And they need people who can lead and lead ethically. And these are all areas that we prepare our students to excel in.
You know, it's a great point. Those soft skills aren't so soft, right? They're much harder. Maybe hard isn't the right word. Essential, critical, power skills. They're necessary because even with data, right? When you talk about data-driven decision making, and you have a piece of data, you have to have the skills to communicate it to other people. And it may be something that they don't want to hear. So you have to persuade. You have to empathize. You have to do all of these things to communicate information. It's just not extrapolated easily by everybody around you. You have to massage, so to speak, a room around a piece of data toward action and so on. And, you know, to your point, employers have talked about that, right? That soft skills are important, but soft skills go ahead.
That's so incredibly true. We've all been in meetings or boardrooms where someone throws a number out without any context or more importantly, without any emotional intelligence, right?
Yes.
And the ability to contextualize what that figure means and what the implications are for the organization, for the community, for society, makes all the difference.
I do this a lot when people call and email me and say that I'm by far the best host on the EdUp experience. And then I relay that information to Elizabeth, but I do have to deliver it more softly, sometimes empathize with her that she's not the best. Liz, I don't know if I'm getting the message across. Perhaps you don't agree, but that's what makes collaboration so much fun, right?
Was it spam? Or was it like, you know, yeah, you go those emails and they're like, oh, You're going to win $1 million. Open and click on this link.
It was my wife actually just emailing me. She was the only one. It was a message from her. But, you
but
know,
the weird know thing is when I saw your wife on the Zoom call, the Zoom chat that we did the other day, she said I was her favorite host. So
yes,
I'm
did.
Not sure.
She also did say that. Yeah.
That I was a rock star.
Mixed messages.
Yeah. I don't know what's going on. I would love though to ask this question because I was thinking about one of our network collaborators who's coming into our podcast network, Tamonte Leary, who actually got his JD. He actually went to law school at St. Thomas. And one of the things we had a conversation probably 6 months ago, or even a year ago. And one of the things he told me that drew him to, because he's from North Carolina, so he's not from Florida. But one of the things that drew him to St. Thomas was when he spoke with the dean and having that personalized touch and having someone sit down and really look him eye to eye and be really interested in who he was as a student. Can you speak a little bit to St. Thomas because of its size? It's a pretty small school. Here in Florida, we have some really big behemoth schools. I went to University of Florida. You know, there's Florida State, there's University of Miami, there's all these big schools in and around both North Florida and South Florida, and even in Central Florida. We have University of Central Florida that's become actually a really big school as well. Can you speak to what makes St. Thomas so different in terms of size and how you're able to use that to maybe differentiate yourself among the other schools in the state?
Absolutely, certainly. So let's come back around to that issue of size, because certainly relative to others, we are smaller, but we're growing a great deal. And that's both exciting and presents a bit of a challenge to us as well that I want to make sure that I address. But, you know, from our earliest days, we've really been committed to a close-in relationship between our mentoring faculty at the university and our students. You know, in 2018, as I got to know the faculty and the staff here at St. Thomas University, that's what they were most proud of. When I asked, what is St. Thomas great at? They talked about that close-in mentoring relationship that faculty had with students and extensive projects that would extend beyond a semester. And of course, these are the kind of experiences that harken back to the 2014 Gallup Purdue Index report that sort of speaks to what are truly transformational experiences that happen for students, specifically undergrads, but I think more to your point, beyond undergrad as well. Now, we've grown 30% as an institution since this administration took the reins in 2018 through fall 2020. And the challenge for us is to make sure that we continue to be so intentional about maintaining that close-end mentoring relationship. And we value it, we hire for it, we train for it, and we certainly reward it here as an institution. That is at the heart of what we do from undergrad all the way through graduate and law school experiences.
Is it easy to lose sight of that, you know, personalized experience as you do grow? I mean, 30% is not an insignificant number when you're talking about growth in higher education. It's huge. You know, and so then you're bringing on new people, you're bringing on new technology, new infrastructure. Is it easy to lose? Maybe not easy, but can you lose sight of that personalized experience easily without that really critical focus, laser focus, I'd say, on it? And how do you keep that focus amongst staff and faculty?
Yeah, excellent question. And I would say for us, no, it's not. It might be hit some institutions where there isn't that focus. But for us, it would be, if I understand the structure of the question, it's not easy for us to lose that focus, because we're really keen on making sure that we hire faculty that are specifically focused on that kind of experience. We make sure that our staff are structuring processes in ways that are, you know, what I call affirmatively invasive. So they help support that mentoring relationship between students and faculty. So, you know, if we were careless about the way that we were adding to our faculty, I'm sure that would dilute our focus on this really transformational set of relationships. But we're not. We know that that's absolutely vital to the quality of the experience here. So we keep a laser focus on it, as you suggest.
Go ahead, Liz.
One thing I definitely feel is interesting as well is the variety of programs and the program mix in terms of giving students an opportunity to have like dual majors or dual concentrations. Can you speak a little bit toward the types of programs that you offer, how intentional you are in terms of creating a variety of programs. Like you said, you have that liberal arts foundation and making sure that the programs also are going to prepare these students for the current and very changing and evolving work environment that we're all seeing that's happened over the past decade and moving forward past COVID and everything else that's happening around the country?
Yeah, Liz, absolutely. So first and foremost, we take a very data-focused approach to making decisions about our programs. And I am thrilled to tell you that I have amazing faculty partners and faculty leaders at the university who lead the way in that process. So we're keenly focused on making sure that we're finding pathways for students that are going to lead them to thrive after they graduate. And, you know, data would suggest that we've been doing a good job of that. In 2020, U.S. News and World Report recognized us as number one regional university in the South for social mobility. So we're very excited about the fact that, you know, so many of our students are first generation in college, and they go on to create a legacy of learning for themselves and for their families. So how do we do that? First, we make sure that we're focused on career pathways that make sense for our students. So, for example, in nursing, we have an RN to BSN program that allows nurses to continue to advance in their higher education as they want to grow their depth of expertise in their careers. Then we added a Master of Science in Nursing program, so they're able to move on to that from being pre-bachelor's on to master's. And now we're adding a doctor in nursing practice. So very discipline-focused pathway of degrees there. And then at the same time, we're developing other pathway of programs that really allow for some diversity of discipline. So I'm very excited about the ethical leadership programs that we've launched here at the institution. We have a PhD in ethical leadership, and the community of students in that program is amazing. They come from multiple disciplines, higher ed, industry, nonprofit, government leadership, and they're focused keenly on leadership studies, but in a way that resonates with what they care about and the mission of our institution. And we're now offering also master's and also a bachelor's major and minor in ethical leadership as well. So regardless of one's academic major, they can bring along a minor in ethical leadership. Speaking back to Joe, the soft skills turn essential skills that we talked about earlier.
Yeah, great point. I do want to ask you, because we're talking about programs and curriculum, how's the job of faculty management these days? Because, you know, the reason I ask is, you know, even though you've been open, you have online offerings, you have online faculty, you have on-ground faculty, you have a faculty that, you know, just because somebody's a faculty member doesn't mean they're not a normal human, right? And they have different risk tolerance when it came to coronavirus. Some never taught online before, then had to teach online. Some wanted to teach on ground and couldn't. And so there's all these emotions that faculty are going through this time. And so how has it been for you and for your team in managing a faculty pool to teach all your classes, to teach them as well and as at a high quality that you want them taught? Has it been a struggle? Has it been, you know, have you seen positives come out of the faculty management experience during the coronavirus period? Talk to me about faculty management and the state of faculty management in general.
Yeah, absolutely. So, well, first and foremost, I have to tell you that I have an amazing president, President David A. Armstrong, JD. And when it became apparent in spring of 20 that we were going to need to make some major changes to be able to allow our students to continue their studies and make progress towards their degree, he gave us the utmost flexibility to be able to do what we needed to be able to do on campus in partnership with our faculty to keep our students moving. So we working together with our faculty, made the commitment to ensure there was not a disruption. We did not convert to pass-fail grades because we knew that the portability of credits was important to our students. And we knew that continuity of the classroom experience, albeit virtually, was maybe one of the constants that our students would have in their lives in the spring. So in working with our faculty, they did amazingly, amazingly well. They were heroic in some of the changes that they made, and frankly, hours to days that March last year. of course, we had some faculty on campus who were already sort of high early adopters of technology, and they made amazing, amazing peer mentors to some of the other faculty who were less experienced in leveraging technology. But what we were able to put together was essentially a synchronous leveraging Zoom, as some institutions did, a synchronous experience to be able to finish out that spring semester, allow our students to earn their credits, their graded credits that they started the semester with. And so our faculty were able to finish up into the summer so well. As we pivoted to fall 2020, I mentioned that we worked to be as flexible as possible with our students. We developed a modality that we called Bobcat Go, we're the Bobcats. And we retrofitted a lot of our classrooms with teleconferencing technology to allow our students and faculty to be able to be synchronous, both in the classroom and then in a distributed fashion for those students who either needed or preferred to be at a distance last fall. Now, as we've moved to the spring, we've consolidated more and more of our students here into the classroom, except for those few students that had individual differences or unique health demands. I'm really pleased to say, as we look towards fall 2021, we'll be putting that mixed modality on the shelf, except for when we need it. Of course, down here in South Florida, we have weather disruptions. We also have remarkable opportunities for guest speakers from around the world. So we're really more adept now at inviting guests into the classroom and weathering, pardon the pun, disruptions than we were in the past.
Do you think students are excited? Are they excited to go, okay, I'm all in again. I'm getting back to what I thought my experience was going to be. Or is there hesitancy? Talk to me about the general mood. Is it just a buzz in the air?
They're so excited. And frankly, they were so excited 11 months ago. You know, one of the ways that we made decisions about how to approach fall 2020 was by talking to our students. And what we heard from so many of our students was, please help me find a way to be in person, face to face in the classroom. And that's precisely what we did last year. So that excitement has only continued. Students are appreciative of the fact that they've been able to continue to make progress towards their degrees. You know, you can imagine 13 months ago, a lot of students were asking whether it made sense or whether they would be able to continue to make progress or whether their higher ed journey would be disrupted or ended along the way. So the excitement is high among not only students, but faculty as well. As I mentioned, we had our commencement ceremonies, three separate commencement ceremonies on Friday of last week, law, bachelor's, and then our master's and doctoral ceremony. And that's always such a shot in the arm for those students who were able to complete. And it was doubly joyous for us, quite frankly, to be able to be with those students and their loved ones and help celebrate in such a challenging year and to see that they were able to complete their journeys regardless.
You know, speaking of challenging years, and I don't know if you know this, Jeremy, from EdUp Experience, it becomes a chronicle of our lives, Elizabeth and I, to some degree. Elizabeth hasn't left her house in many, many months. Walks to the mailbox, maybe, maybe not. Would she be welcome on the campus of St. Thomas University since you're opening up to just get some fresh air?
Absolutely. We have 140 acres of beautiful campus right here in South Florida. Liz, we were chatting earlier. We're not that far apart. We'd love to have you come visit on campus.
I would be honored. I love the area, Miami Gardens. I've actually lived in that area before, and I love that area. It's amazing that you're right near the beach. You're right. Literally anything that you want to do in Miami, you're like right in the heart of everything. So I love that area. And I have a question for you in terms of the idea of serving first-generation students. We kind of alluded to that earlier, and this generation of student in general, how you said they were really excited and they wanted to get back to campus. Talk to us a little bit, and this is a little bit more of a philosophical question about, I see we have also some other things in common other than both of us living in South Florida, that you worked for University of Phoenix for some years. Actually, that's the first place I worked in higher education was University of Phoenix. I started there. I don't even know, forever ago. I won't even give Joe any more fodder.
Long time ago.
And I worked there for several years in admissions. And I think one of the things that I loved and actually made me love working in higher education was this idea of first generation students, instilling this idea of return on investment and helping the students to see how genuinely important it is for them to have a college degree. What are your thoughts on that with the types of students that you serve there at St. Thomas? Are they, or do you believe that we're doing a good enough job in our sector of helping students to really understand return on investment? And I see that you guys have, as far as some of the awards and accolades you've received, very reasonable and have been awarded for your and acknowledged for your reasonable tuition. How are you able to kind of balance all that to make sure that you're serving the students' needs and also to make sure they understand the importance of the return on investment on the tuition and maintaining your low tuition costs for the students so that they don't graduate with a ton of student loan debt?
With more than 2,700 customers in over 50 countries and serving 26 million students, Ellucian keeps innovating as higher education keeps evolving. With its sole focus on higher education, Ellucian guides its customers through manageable, sustainable digital transformation so that every type of institution and student can thrive in today's fast-changing landscape. To find out what's next in higher education solutions and services, visit Ellucian at www.ellucian.com. That's ELLUCIAN.com.
Yeah, absolutely. So I am incredibly proud of the fact that the vast majority of my career has been spent in service of students who are mostly first generation in college. And, you know, I can tell you at St. Thomas University this fall, 43% of our students were first generation in college. So if that gives you a sense of what it's like here on campus, it's amazing. Our students really care about this opportunity. They don't feel entitled to it. They value it and they pursue it with amazing excitement and commitment, and look for the kind of mentorship that we want to be able to provide along the way. We don't take anything for granted at St. Thomas University. We make sure that we make the implicit explicit. And frankly, those are the kind of things that are the gaps between some of the risks that first generation college students have that those who aren't don't. And that's how we level the playing field. In terms of our students of seeing the value and the potential return, you know, sometimes we spell that out, and you know, we did a little research project about a year ago where we compared the value of a higher ed degree relative to the cost and declining value of purchasing an automobile, which is something that many people do without spending a lot of time thinking about it. The latter, that is. And, you know, the upshot, of course, is that investing in a degree or degrees for oneself is the absolute best possible investment that you can make. And our students recognize that, and we're honored to be along the journey with them.
Jeremy, let me interrupt you. Can I interrupt you? I just wanted, I'm sorry to interrupt, but I got to ask you, because I agree with what you said. I totally agree that investing in oneself and getting an education is the absolute best path, but there's so many that don't agree and I just don't get it. I mean, what do you think it is, and why are people questioning the overall value of a degree these days? I mean, do you think it's something that has to do with college itself, or is it business? I just don't understand. I'm wondering if you have some insight.
You know, it's a terrific question, Joe. And I not to get too into this, but I feel that it's yoked to some extent to a sort of an anti-intellectualism movement. And frankly, it just doesn't make sense. If you look at the data, the absolute best investment you can make in terms of earned income and frankly, in terms of quality of life and happiness, if you look at the Gallup-Purdue Index, which arguably we're all interested in, quality of life is that higher ed degree. It's your best possible bet.
What do you think, Liz? I mean, you know how many people have come on here and gone higher degree, you know, higher education. Yes. Higher education. No, it's maybe not no, but you know, you don't have to get it to be successful. And I argue that because there's also those that argue that the entire system of employment is designed based on a degree as a qualifier in some way. But what do you think? and I want to stop here because I think there's such an, the way you said it, Jeremy, is so matter of fact that yes, yeah, you know, so let's stop there just for a sec.
Yeah, I have to agree with Dr. Moreland. I feel like there is a certain amount of, maybe the, it's a generational thing perhaps. And there is a little bit of anti-intellectualism in that. I think that there is almost like this microwave aspect of, you know, quick, easy solutions for things, and nothing that's worth having is something that you can just snap your fingers and just get. So I think sometimes college does look unattainable. I think there's also something to be said about, and Dr. Moreland also spoke to this, the idea that for us in higher education, sometimes what we can do to improve the perception of ROI will be to work more closely with students, make sure that faculty are being very engaged with students, work on mentoring. I think that sometimes some of the criticism may be warranted, you know, to be honest with you, because even though in the stats, we can't argue with the stats. Your overall lifetime income is higher if you have a degree. Quality of life, life expectancy, anything that you can think of, all these well-being, healthcare, anything that you can think of, typically you're going to have better outcomes if you have a college degree. However, there has been elitism, there has been barriers to entry, there's been financial aspects, retention issues, graduation rates, things that perhaps we as an industry can do better so that students are not graduating with skyrocketing debt or even worse, dropping out because of all of the complications of navigating. And I think Dr. Moreland alluded to this as well, this idea that a lot of students being first generation students, if you have 40% of your students on campus at the first gen, more than likely they have very special needs that are going to be different from a student that has been exposed to higher education, has parents that have a degree. You know, my kids are going to have it a lot different than I did because I'm college educated and I'm able to kind of navigate them through where I figured it out on my own as a first generation student. So I think maybe some of this will take some time to come through the wash, as they would say. But I think for us as a sector, we have to do better with some of the things that they're doing well at St. Thomas, the mentoring and creating an environment that nurtures success, especially for first generation students.
What do you think, Jeremy?
I totally agree, Liz. And really this is a one by one job that we do here. And, you know, it's incumbent upon institutions to make sure that we're thinking practically about the futures of our students and the investment that we're making. So that's why we're so committed to experiential education. A wide variety, you know, certainly includes things like study abroad, but we're very keen on making sure that all of our students have internship experiences so that we're working up alongside students with potential employers or environments that feel like where employment might be for those students and assessing how they're doing and getting feedback from the employers on how those students are doing. And that's what really allows us to keep our ear to the ground with employers and at the same time, make sure that each one of our students are really ready to go.
Yeah, I know I interrupted you. I can't remember. You were making another point. We don't have to go backwards, but this is why Liz is much more popular as a host than me because she doesn't do that. So then I mess you up and then you go. And
I usually try to text you to stop you, but I didn't do that this time.
I didn't get it. I didn't get the message, Liz.
But I love that Dr. Moreland has such a very keen sense of what's needed for that special demographic of student. And I think that really speaks to the heart of a good leader, because I think sometimes when you have leadership that are really focused on, okay, these are our goals, these are things we need to do, and maybe not so much focused on, I always look at it as I allude to this idea of, you know, when you have, one of the things that I've done among many other jobs is I worked in addiction treatment, and they always kind of said that, you know, you have to put the mask on yourself first. Like whoever's most vulnerable, you know, you kind of secure those people, but you have to secure yourself first and then secure the most vulnerable. So I think in terms of, you know, our sector, we really have to do a better job of thinking of how we can be solid in terms of what we need to do, how we need to do it, making sure we as a sector are focused on our goals. And then once we are a little bit more deliberate, looking at who's the most vulnerable that we need to make sure that we take care of, if that makes sense. And I think sometimes we don't tend to necessarily do that. We don't necessarily tend to look at, well, okay, now that we are a little bit more like in a situation with COVID, okay, we had to kind of get campuses secure. We had to make sure that we could keep the doors open, keep the lights on. But then, okay, next, who's our most vulnerable? And I think COVID actually put a really, and maybe Dr. Moreland can speak to this. I think what it did is put a spotlight on those students that are the most vulnerable. And if we didn't secure them with technology, if we didn't make sure that they were taken care of as far as just the basics, then we weren't going to be able to keep those students. Can you speak a little bit to that about maybe how the pandemic has changed the way that we look at those vulnerable students and kind of ways that you're doing that on your campus to ensure since COVID has happened? Has it enlightened you a little bit, or were you guys pretty much woke as to what needed to be done anyway?
I'd say that we were well on our way to being being aware, but certainly COVID gave us the opportunity to get even deeper insight into what some of the challenges were that some of our students had. Some of them were very clear, you know, pragmatic challenges like Wi-Fi or broadband access or access to technology to be able to engage in class, and we were able to help surmount some of those problems for our students. Some are a little more insidious, and you know, we started to have more and more students come to us with concerns that we were able to address through our counseling staff. So we added to our counseling team there as well. And then, like I said, this work is really one by one as we work with each student. You know, it's kind of funny as I meet students and they say, well, what do you do here? And if I make the mistake of saying I'm the provost, they kind of give me that blank look, like, what in the world is that? And then, of course, I correct myself and explain, hey, it's my job to work with every one of your faculty to make sure that you have a terrific experience. Then we can get on with the individual conversations where they say, hey, you know, I've got a problem in this particular case. Can you help me with that? So, frankly, for us, it was really about just keeping our ears open and being available to students, every single one of us, faculty, frontline staff, my office as well.
Jeremy, I want to ask you a question just to shift the conversation to your personal background a little bit. You, as Elizabeth said, you spent quite a long time at the University of Phoenix, Trailblazer in online education, and you made the transition from the University of Phoenix into, let's just call it a nonprofit education, as opposed to the for-profit model. I've done a very similar journey as yours. I was shocked at the lack of infrastructure that I was used to when I came to nonprofit ed, when it came to student experience and retention and data and infrastructure. Can you talk about your findings, if you will, when you transitioned from that for-profit, you know, machine, for lack of a better way to say it, University of Phoenix at one time had over 500,000 students, to, you know, smaller nonprofit universities? And what were the strengths? What were the differences that you'd feel comfortable talking about?
Sure, Joe. So certainly having big numbers gives us the chance to really refine quality at scale quickly, right? I, for example, as an academic dean, signed over 4,000 dissertations. I know what a good dissertation looks like, and I know how to work with faculty very quickly to dissect it into its key components to make sure that it's going to allow a student to move ahead with an effective idea. And similarly, at University of the Rockies, where I was first provost and CAO, as you suggested, before I came to St. Thomas. We had terrific systems in place and had a really strong student experience because they knew what to expect from us. When I had the opportunity to come and join President Armstrong here at St. Thomas University, I think what he was attracted to was my sense of precisely that, which was to create systems to impose a consistent experience for our students so that the stuff that shouldn't be hard wasn't hard, so they could focus on the things that should be hard, the challenging academics. So what I found here, well, first, let me say what I found here was an amazing faculty that was really open to new ideas, And that was a critical component to the improvements that we've made here. And we've grown over 20% in terms of graduate and doctoral enrollment since fall of 2018 because of the work. What we found was a lot of people doing really great, really hard, really fine work in very different ways, not because they intended to do it differently, but simply they didn't have a shared vision for what a student experience and for what quality looked like. So having those conversations really accelerated our ability to create a more consistent student experience at the university. It allowed us to leverage our technology in a way that was harmonious across the institution rather than conflicting, and has really allowed us to be able to attract students who recognize that we're offering a high quality set of offerings and also who really resonate with our mission.
Right. Does that make sense, Joe? Yeah, it does. And it's such a, I'm glad you talked about it because I found a very similar situation at my university. You know, people that wanted to grow, they wanted to teach, better or easier or more effectively. It was just a lack of systems, a lack of innovation, lack of that vision by a key leader. And when you talk about growth, and this is, when we talk about higher ed growth, a lot of times your mind, or at least many of our minds, head right to recruitment, marketing, recruitment. You can grow that front end, but your delivery of your academic product, your offerings, is your marketing value proposition. And if that part of the business is not in order, it becomes impossible to sell it. And, you coming in and you putting those systems in place and providing that vision allowed St. Thomas University to grow by 30% because you're then presenting a product that makes much more sense. And when you can distill your value proposition, it resonates with people. I think that's one of the keys. The reason I bring it up, Jeremy, is there was a LinkedIn poll the other day somebody put out that said, if you only had, so many dollars to invest, where would you put it? Marketing in recruitment, academic programs, outcomes or something else. And I said, my answer was, well, I've been in recruiting and marketing for 20 years, but if I don't have an academic product, that's my answer. My academic product, I need to grow that because my marketing infrastructure is built around it. You can't just invest in the front end without that academic infrastructure being there. So I'm glad you pointed it out because I think it's so key to growth, right?
I couldn't agree more. Absolutely. If I didn't have amazing faculty offering high quality, relevant programs, the marketing would be senseless.
Hear that, Liz? Sometimes I do get it right. What do you think?
You did. Good job. I wanted to ask as well, because Joe's kind of pivoted to this area. And I think that this is really important because I love to talk with experienced leaders, leaders that have had a variety of experience. I'm glad that Joe talked about this. Sometimes I think in order to be a really effective leader, you have to have a great perspective and be able to be self-reflective. And I think sometimes it really helps to have been in a variety of different environments so that you can bring those different perspectives to the table and bring value at your institution. If you had to, and Joe asks this question sometimes, if you had to advise someone that's moving into a leadership role at a college or university, and you were in that mentorship role, what would you say are some of the most important lessons that you've learned as you've worked your way up into this leadership capacity? And what are some of the most important skills or tools or perspectives that you think are important for someone that wants to make their way into such a role?
Oh my gosh. Wow. What a terrific big question.
She did say I ask that question sometimes.
Yeah. I plagiarized your question, but I made it sound so much better than you do. That's the only thing.
I love it.
you two are so much fun. This is a blast. Where my head goes as you ask that question is the people, and finding ways to hold up and support the leaders who are here or who can be, and allow them to be able to innovate. I'm not an oracle. I don't know all of my programs well enough to teach in them, but I do know who the leaders are, and I know how to get problems out of their way so that they can do what they need to do. So, you know, another maybe more succinct way of putting that is, you know, finding ways to surround yourself by amazing people who are smarter than you. And I suppose I've worked hard to do that. But, you know, I am most proud of the faculty partners that I've been able to attract, both within an institution like this one, who came to me with their ideas about how to innovate and make their program stronger and more attractive and more pertinent. And then at the same time, attract new talent, you know, back to maybe hearkening back to a point early in our conversation, not talent that is new, but talent that is new to the institution, faculty who say, I'm really excited about what's happening there. And here are the ideas I have about the contributions that I can make in ways that resonate with your mission, your focus on high quality mentoring of students, and growing programs that are professionally relevant.
Well, that's amazing. By the way, Jeremy, your radio ready voice puts Liz and I both to shame. It's about time after this 40 minutes or so that we recognize that, Liz, that we are far behind our radio voice.
I have to do some vocal exercise. me.
You guys, you're too kind.
Well, we want to be conscious of your time. We know that you're servicing students, and that's your primary role. We thank you for sacrificing some of your time to come on the EdUp Experience podcast. We've got two final questions for you that we ask every guest. Number one, what did we miss about St. Thomas University? It needs to be said, maybe something that you wanted to talk about when you came on, but Liz wouldn't let you get a word in edgewise. So here's your opportunity to say it. And number two, I couldn't even say it with a straight face. Number two, what does the future of higher education look like?
Wow. What have we missed? What we missed is my extending an invitation to anyone who wants to come down to St. Thomas, either in person or virtually, to learn more. I would love to talk with anyone out there who's listening and is curious about either St. Thomas directly, a program that we have, possibly faculty opportunities, or maybe more generally, how we go about doing what we're doing. I'm always happy to make connections and meet friends out in higher education and beyond. And I'm always interested in sharing good practices back and forth. And gosh, where is the industry headed? Was that your second question? That's a big one.
Yeah. You have to bring the Oracle that you said you're not. You got to be the Oracle.
Oh my gosh. Well, here's the best I can do. I think the challenge for an institution like ours that is working to continue to thrive, to serve generations of students, has to find the right way to be able to continue to be who we are as we grow intentionally. And I think we're on the right path to doing that right now, but it's something that we're going to have to work every single day to do. I think the future will hold failure for institutions that don't do that, that don't focus on who they are as they try to continue to be viable.
I like that answer. I got to be honest. I think that's really insightful. Thank you so much for coming on the show today, Dr. Jeremy Moreland. It has been incredible. You're the chief, what's your official title? Chief Academic Officer and Provost, correct?
That's correct. Thank you so much.
Well, Liz, this has been another successful. See, I even got the title right at the end. I write it down at the beginning that I remember it. And then I turned the page, you know, of my paper because I'm taking notes, and then I have to go back and try to remember everything. So
just make sure you keep those notes in a binder because you got to study those. I'm going to be quizzing you.
What is a binder? I work from home. I have no paper. It's an electronic binder. Well, it's been an honor, Jeremy, to have you here. Thank you so much. We know how valuable your time is, and it's been an incredible conversation. Thank you.
Okay, it's an absolute pleasure. Thanks so much. Go Bobcats.
Hey, everybody. We hope you enjoyed that episode of the EdUp Experience. To learn more about the EdUp Experience, please visit our website at www.edupexperience.com and subscribe to our email list. Please share this podcast, head over to Apple, and please give us a rating and review. We appreciate your feedback. And of course, subscribe to the EdUp Experience so you're notified when our episodes drop. Here at the EdUp Experience, our goal is to make education your business. Thanks for listening.